Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach Wendy Dillard here. Today is Thursday, October the 11th, 2018, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, your second daily dose of happy for the day. And we hope your day continues to go swimmingly. It goes swimmingly here because we've had rain all day, so we're just swimming through the day. But no, all is good. In fact, I got some really good news today. Finally, the issue with Bitdefender appears to be repaired, and they sent a global download, and I downloaded it, installed it, and held my breath, and then tried a test of the speaker broadcaster, and it worked. And I just tried again, of course, now, and it worked again. So I think the issue is resolved.
For those that have no idea what you're talking about, Bitdefender is the name of Walt's antivirus program.
That's right, yeah.
And it started having some hiccups with the platform that we do our podcast.
Absolutely.
And so that's why a number of our shows could not be aired live, but only in a pre-recorded state. So what he's saying is...
No, that's fair. Fair
it
point.
Seems to have been resolved.
I repeat the story over and over again, so I assume other people have been listening to all the other episodes. But you're right. We have new listeners who don't know what I'm talking about, and they're saying, what the hell is he talking about? So,
well,
good,
and some
good
people
explanation.
Have no idea what Bitdefender is.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah, it's an antivirus program. And a very good one, too, by mm-hmm. the way. But it does tend to get a little aggressive sometimes. And this time, kind of got the sword out a little bit early. But that's all right. It's repaired. Everything's working great. Life is good. How's things
cool.
with you?
Awesome, as usual.
Excellent.
Because, you know, even when they're not, I was listening to your show with Joel this morning, and he had some great stories about how, one in particular, how he's in the gym, and he asked some guy how things are going. He said, great. And then
You're
the
right.
next 20 minutes, the guy poured out all these
negative
stories. So for my world, what I like to do is if you say, how are you doing? I say, awesome, or I'm doing wonderful as usual. Now, but what that doesn't mean is that I don't have hiccups along the way.
Mm.
It means I'm choosing not to focus upon them because what I know about my life is it is awesome and wonderful.
That's a great way to look at it, too, because
how
we handle those hiccups is really the way we not only get through our day, but it reflects what's happening in our lives overall, what we're attracting, what we're experiencing, how we're feeling about it. It's really everything.
Well, and I am a person who has... My level of integrity is such that I feel I cannot lie.
Mm.
And so that means I can't tell an untruth, even if it's for the purpose of trying to stay positive. And
yeah.
So I remember dealing with this quite a while ago, saying, hey, inner being, how can I be truthful when life really sucks at the moment?
I know the feeling, too. I know the feeling.
When somebody's saying, how are you? I don't want to... reiterate what's not working. I don't want to tell that negative story because that does not serve me, nor does it serve the other person.
True.
And I was really focused on this for a while. I'm like, I know there has to be a way. And the awareness that came to me, and I thought this was quite cool, is that what I have in my vortex is everything I've ever desired. In that vortex, there's only pure positive energy. And in that vortex, anything that in my life doesn't feel good, it's already done. It's already resolved in my vortex.
Oh, good point.
So what I chose to do is if you said, so how's your life going today, Wendy? And let's say it really sucked in terms of my actual physical reality. I could focus on what I know is real, and it does feel real to me in my vortex, which is all the issues that I might be dealing with in the moment. Are already resolved, and I've already received the gift and the beauty and the wonderment of it all. So if you were to say, how's your world going? I would focus on what's in my vortex, and I could feel my level of integrity was intact when I focus on my vortex, and I go, everything's awesome. My world is wonderful. And that is true when I focus on my vortex.
That's a very good idea. I like that a lot. I mean, the whole idea of focusing on what's going on inside, basically. I mean, that's really where we're thinking and focusing. Because everything is okay inside. I mean, it's so obvious that we should just be saying, well, duh. But do we think about that when somebody says, how are you doing? And we're about to say, no, life sucks. You know, it's the last thing the right thing to think about.
Our inner being is in a perpetual state of wonderfulness. Our inner being is in a perpetual state of knowing our life is awesome and there's nothing wrong, nothing broken, and nothing negative that's of concern.
Really good.
So when I focus there, I can be very honest in my response. And I feel not only am I being honest, but I'm not creating any additional momentum on my negative story. I'm actually pivoting towards that which I desire. And I'm modeling to other people what's possible.
And you're reducing your own stress level too. Because when you're
it helps.
When you're stuck in that, because you're right, when you're stuck in that integrity battle of trying to figure out how the heck do I express it that it remains true to myself but doesn't bring myself or somebody else down, that's a downer just even trying to resolve that issue. But when you look at the way you're describing, that issue goes away. It reduces or even eliminates stress.
And I found that when I respond that way, it makes me feel really good and I smile and it gives me this sense of, look what I just did. I just pivoted on a dime. And this person gave me the opportunity to pivot. Thank you to this person. And it all feels great.
That is good. Thank you for that. That was really good. I don't know why I never thought of that before.
You're very welcome.
But I know why I didn't think of it before. None of us ever do. When somebody asks how you doing, it's all about the physical world. That's what we respond to.
Exactly. And so today we were going to kind of pick up where we left off on Tuesday, mm-hmm. where we were talking about the importance of our feelings and how our feelings are messengers. And as I was listening to your show with Joel this morning, he was talking about having some needing to set some new boundaries with one of his clients that is actually a whole family.
Mm-hmm.
And you asked a cool question. You said, well, how do boundaries and law of attraction relate?
Which we never really got a chance to answer during the podcast.
Yeah, I think you said you ran out of time before he could really put the two together. He gave some great definitions of boundaries, but it was cool because when you were asking that question of him, I thought, well, if I were on a show with Walt and he asked me that question, how would I respond? Mm.
Well, before you give that response, I want to get our promos in first. So first and foremost, if you're not yet a subscriber, maybe this is the first episode you're listening to. And if you're listening to this one first, congratulations. You picked a great co-host to do it with. But if this is your first episode or one of the first ones you have not yet become a subscriber, please become a subscriber. And it's so easy to do. I mean, most people these days have figured out how to do it. But just in case you're one who has a little trouble figuring that out, we have instructions for you on the homepage of the website at loatoday.net. In fact, it's so simple that all you have to do is look at the two icons that are on the main part of the homepage. One's for people who have iPhones and iPads. One's for people who have Androids. You click that, and it does it. It's just, you're there. So it's really, really simple. Second is for those who are subscribers and even for those who are now new subscribers, please take a moment to share on social media the fact that you're listening to LOAToday.net because this campaign we've been running for the last 3 or 4 months to have our listeners and ask our listeners to help promote the show is really paying off. More and more people are finding out about us. More and more people are getting their daily doses of happy. And in the long run, that just keeps multiplying and multiplying until finally we're reaching, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe even one day millions of people. And I still staggers my imagination how, you know, what happens when we get an entire globe of people who are getting their daily dose of happy. I mean, the whole global mind shift, I can't even begin to describe it. It's just amazing to me. So that's it. Those are the messages right there.
So now we'll kind of jump into, what are the feelings that cause one to know that they have boundaries that are being broken or that they need to set new boundaries? Because it really does still all come down to feelings. Joel didn't express it that way. He just said, he expressed some other feelings about his own time management and that he was having the good problem of having so many clients and, you know, so much good stuff going on that he really felt like he didn't have ample time when this family was sending him many, many, many emails, sometimes all at the same time.
Yeah, and that was in reference to a story that he told about clients he was working with and this whole family of five was in all kinds of chaos within themselves, and he was really kind of working hard with them, trying to help them out. Mm-hmm. But they had gotten to the point whenever they got into a fight, all five of them would text him at the same time. He said, okay, that's it. Draw the line. We're not doing that anymore.
Well, and, you know, I totally get that because, you know, I provide email support to my clients as well. And I remember one of my clients, you know, she sent me this really long, long, long email and asked me some really deep questions. Now, this is probably not the same thing as Joel's, but I didn't want to talk about Joel's circumstances because I don't know them. So I'll talk about my own. And I read the email, and as I was reading, I thought, oh my God, this could take me a minimum of an hour to give an appropriate response. Not to mention, who know, when somebody writes something in an email, you don't know all the things that they may have left out.
Oh yeah.
That you can uncover when you're doing a personal one-on-one session.
Plus, you can't pick up the body language, the inferences, you know, all that kind of stuff that's in the background. You can't see that in an email.
So I followed my feelings, which is I read this email. I understood to the best of my ability what the client was asking for, but it felt overwhelming to respond.
Mm.
That feeling of overwhelmment said to me, something's not in alignment right now. Something...
Yeah.
I'm not thinking the same way my inner being is thinking. And so I asked my inner being, what do I do with this? This person's asking a really big, important question. And I just kind of heard, take a step back, you know, like don't respond right now, just step away from it.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. And then a little while later, I came back to the email and I didn't feel as overwhelmed this time. As a matter of fact, I felt pretty neutral. And I thought, you know what? I could not do justice to answering this question by email.
Mm.
And so that's exactly how I responded. And I felt I had a feeling of what the thought track I was on right now was totally appropriate. And so I did say in my email, wow, you know, what an awesome question. It's very deep. You thought it really through. And I said, I have a lot of thoughts that I'd like to share with you, but I believe it would be better served for me to share those thoughts with you when we're in a session, versus responding by email. And it was ironic because she responded back. She said, yeah, I kind of had that feeling. So yeah, let's talk about it next time. But you know, I could have tried.
Sure.
And I know from past experience, when I've tried to give a response, when I'm already feeling like, oh God, what if I say the wrong thing and it takes them off on a deep end because they're asking a different question, what I think they're asking, it actually makes it muddy. It gets messy, and I actually it creates more problems than it could have or needed to have.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So I was grateful that I followed my feelings. But now what does this do have to do with boundaries? Well, by saying no in my own way, I didn't just say, no, I'm not going to answer this. But in my own way, I recognized that I didn't really have any boundaries around the email support that I want to give. You know, on my website, it just says, you know, in this package, you know, you get so many hours of sessions and email support.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't narrow down what that means because I feel like if I go into a long diatribe of how much email support they can have versus not, I'm focusing on what I don't want.
Makes sense.
You know, I really don't want to do much email with my clients, but I also want to know that if they really have an issue they want to shoot out an email, I'm happy to receive it.
Mm-hmm.
But in this moment, it caused me to kind of define for myself, what kind of boundaries do I want to have when it comes to my email support? And even though I don't have it listed anywhere on my website, I kind of set it the intention in my own mind that my boundary is if I can give like a one sentence response and I feel like one sentence will cover it clearly, like, now this is not the a real email question, but are you available tomorrow at 3 o'clock?
Yeah.
My response would be, yes, I'm happy to talk to you at 3. I'll call you then.
Sure. Yeah, that's appropriate.
Yeah, where it's so clean cut that I know you can't screw up the meaning of what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, that to me is not email support. That's just normal logistics.
Right.
But if someone asked a question that could have that clean of a response, I feel totally comfortable giving that. Now, I'm not giving anybody – this was another thing as far as boundaries. I remember sometimes I'd get an email question from one of my clients, and I wasn't in a place to give them a thorough, thoughtful answer.
Mm-hmm.
But there would be a feeling of, oh, but I should respond right away.
Hmm.
And it doesn't feel good. Like, I can't crank out the right answer right now because I have to really think about it. So I have this feeling of they're not going to think I got it or I'm responsive to them. But I also don't want to give them an answer that doesn't give them the thorough, thoughtful answer. And so I went, okay, inner being, I've got this feeling and it feels really uncomfortable. What do I do with this? What's the message? And what I recognized was I put my own self-imposed rule that I needed to respond the moment I saw it. And I thought, that wasn't an agreement with my client. We never talked about it, but this was my own self-imposed rule.
Right.
And so that feeling helped me recognize that self-imposed rule. And I went, that doesn't feel good. Where the heck did I come up with that rule? Well, in that moment, that kind of was a rhetorical question. I said, well, what do I want to do with that rule? And I said, I don't want to keep that one. That's not serving me. That doesn't work for me, and it doesn't feel good. So I set up a new boundary with myself, which was I will answer when it feels like I can give a thorough, mindful, thoughtful response, and not until.
That's good. And by the way,
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish your thing.
I was going to say, and the other alternative is, and I've been known to do this, is I'll respond. I say, I received your email, but I need some time to compose my thoughts about how to respond to this. So I'll get back to you sometime in the next couple of days. Stay tuned.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. And I love the way when the whole process started and you got that email, I loved what your first step was after you got your feedback from Inner Being, and Inner Being says, step back. And you took a step back. I love that because it occurred to me there are not many circumstances that we find unpleasant where that is not appropriate. That actually works most of the time. And it's a great way to avoid getting, you know, assuming that you recognize you're potentially getting into something that doesn't feel good and that's going to lead to stuff you don't like. Assuming you recognize that, that's a great way to just stop it cold. Like, I'm just going to take a step back, give it a moment, take a breath.
So how boundaries and law of attraction intersect is I'm now saying, I don't know that I've said on this show, but I'm now saying that to truly be a deliberate creator, you cannot not include spirituality or your inner guidance as a part of that.
Mm.
Because that's how you know, go left, go right, stop, start, move now, do not move now, you know, get more information. If you don't work with your inner guidance to get that kind of thing, I don't know, I could be wrong, but I don't know how you can be a deliberate creator because there's so many variables, and being able to receive that spiritual intuitive guidance to me is that's what makes it or breaks it for me.
Well, certainly you're going to be a much more effective deliberate creator doing that. I mean, I can conceive of the idea of someone who isn't totally connected being a deliberate creator because, I mean, we see them all the time. Doesn't mean they're always successful. Doesn't mean they always successfully manifest what it is they're trying for, but they're still deliberately creating. They're just not doing it successfully all the time.
Well, and I think when Abraham or other people who practice law of attraction talk about being a deliberate creator, we're talking about creating something specific in a successful manner.
Mm.
Because otherwise, we're just creators. Because we're all creators of both things we want and things we don't want.
Oh, yeah.
I
was just going to say, just like we've always used the law of attraction, even though we didn't know we were using it.
Right. I think, though, that the term deliberate creator has a little bit more definition around it, where we're purposefully selecting what we want to create, and then we work on creating it. And so to me, when I haven't created what I want yet, I wasn't a deliberate creator of my desire. I was just a creator of what I don't want. So to me, being a deliberate creator is aiming toward that which you want. And I honestly believe that having a connection with your inner being to receive intuitive guidance, to receive those nudges and impulses to move or not move, I think that's an important element to deliberate creating. I don't know that you can do it without.
I hear you, yeah. I would say at the very least, when you have that kind of connection and you use it like that, that makes you a master deliberate creator. I mean, that like sets you up head and shoulders above what most people are even attempting out there.
Okay.
I mean, really.
I personally feel like I'm a master of law of attraction, but I don't necessarily at this point consider myself a master deliberate creator.
Well, let's put it this way. You're farther ahead than most people I know. Not all. There are others who do the same kind of thing that you do, including many of my co-hosts. But when I talk to people online, it becomes very evident to me that not all are making that kind of connection. Not all are listening inside like you are. So I don't know. Maybe that's just me, but maybe it's just my way of saying kudos to you. You're up a level. You're doing well.
So it's kind of relative to one's own perspective and one's own, you know, the gauge that we gauge ourselves by.
Oh yeah, of course, as always.
It took me a long time to be able to or to have the willingness to say I'm a master or I've artfully mastered law of attraction because I do understand it. But being a deliberate creator for me was a whole other level, you know.
Especially the way you define it.
Well, and to me, it's like however we would do it is fine. But I like to define the terms. When I say this word, this is what I'm meaning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anyway, I just believe to truly be a deliberate creator, it's not enough to just know the principles of law of attraction. In terms of, you know, sending out a broadcast signal and having law of attraction respond, but how I think you really gain mastery over that. I'll incorporate some of what you're saying. How you gain mastery over that is by honing your ability to hear guidance from your inner being.
So let's tie it back to the question we were talking about earlier, and that is the relationship between boundaries and the law of attraction. Because clearly, if you're going to have good boundaries, those boundaries have to be consistent with you as deliberate creator. Otherwise, well, they're not good boundaries.
Well, I mean, boundaries is a psychological term. At least that's how I know it. And it has a definition around it. Everything has to do with law of attraction. But to me, whether you're keeping your boundaries or having someone bust through your boundaries, will always be noted by how you feel. So if somebody sends me, so here's another one. So somebody sent me an email. It was an inquiry from, they'd seen me on my website and they said, hey, I'm interested in talking to you about doing some coaching with you. And the first feeling, I felt like this person didn't give me much information about them. So it kind of felt really vague. And it caused me to think, because it didn't feel good when I received this, it caused me to think, I wonder if I want to set a boundary or set a rule or make an ask of people to please give me a little bit of idea of what they're trying to accomplish, why they're even looking for a coach.
Yeah, I'd say it's reasonable.
You know, and then as I thought about that, the thought was that's reasonable, but it didn't feel good to do it.
Really?
So I went, okay, well, there's still this feeling. I was uncomfortable when I received the email. So I felt into the feeling and I went, okay, what's this about? And I went, oh, wow. My first thought was they can't afford me. And so whatever response I have feels like it's just a waste of my time because they can't afford me anyway. So what's the point?
Well, yeah, that would feel really bad. I mean, if that's the association you had, no wonder you felt the way you did.
And so I thought, well, first of all, that's kind of a shallow way of thinking, like I'm wasting my time.
Right.
There is no thing as, I can only have my time wasted if I focus on it as such. In a way, that's kind of a boundary.
Okay.
Like unless my time feels like it'll be used in a valuable way, I feel like you've broken my boundary by, you know, wasting my time.
Yeah, certainly.
Like if I have a boundary called wasting time or not wasting time, you know, then there's certain rules that are associated with it. So I looked at this and I just kind of laughed. I went, well, look at that. This person, whoever they are, they're helping me to clean up my money vibration. because I was thinking they can't afford me.
That's a nice pivot.
What on earth would cause me to think they can't afford me? There was nothing that they said in the email that would give the impression that they can't afford me.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognized that and I went, wow, that's really silly. So I went, I talked to this person hired me and they didn't have a problem affording me. And I went, so I can see the folly in my old way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next person that emailed me, kind of similar situation. And this time I recognized I wasn't thinking they couldn't afford me. I went, oh, cool. I must have cleaned up that vibration. So I'm like, yeah, of course they can afford me. Duh. But I wouldn't have shifted my point of view or my perspective or my boundaries had I not been paying attention to how it felt.
That's a nice story to illustrate how easy it is for you, too. I mean, the process you follow is so simple. You basically just recognized there was something there, kind of identified it, and by the time the next instance came along, it was done. I mean, there was no strife. There was no sweating over it. It was just done.
Well, and what we talked about Tuesday, I kind of started with talking about how I had seen the movie A Star Is Born,
mm-hmm.
and the main character is an alcoholic and a drug addict and just has so many emotional blockages in his life. And that to me is the extreme, although there are many people in our society who do live life at that extreme level. But that to me is an example of somebody who didn't know how to process the negative feelings when they were current in the moment,
mm-hmm.
present,
mm-hmm.
and stuffed it, shoved it down, repressed it, or denied it because they didn't know what else to do. And then when the next negative feeling on that subject happened, again, didn't know what to do with it. They either stuffed it, repressed it, denied it, or shoved it down. And I want to help all of humanity. One at a time, group at a time, podcast at a time, however it comes to me. I want to help humanity recognize that, first of all, our feelings sometimes feel overwhelming and scary. But when we really look at them, when we're really present with any one emotional feeling, it just is. As in, it doesn't have all the angst that we attach to it.
Mm.
I've never said this before. I just sound like Abraham, didn't I? I've never said this before, but it's the not looking at something that causes the fear. When you allow yourself to feel the feeling, the fear dissipates.
That's true.
As a matter of fact, science shows that every emotional feeling we experience, if we don't add more story in our head to that feeling, if we just stop, within 90 seconds, that feeling will dissipate and be completely neutral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so a feeling in itself is not the problem. Our lack of willingness to acknowledge the feeling is what actually causes the fear. And that's what I've never said before.
Mm. And it's true, because when you actually get down to the root of whatever the stuff is, whatever it is, doesn't matter what it is, by the time you got there, the fear portion isn't even part of the conversation anymore. It's the rest of it that's now part of the conversation. But the fear, you lost that as soon as you burrowed down. That's what I found anyway. Fear is always about what's going to happen if you burrow down, not what happens when you burrow down.
Yes. And once you acknowledge the fear and you're willing to look at what's really going on that's causing you to feel that you're fearful, now you're dealing with something that generally doesn't have nearly as much charge.
Mm.
It doesn't have nearly as much negative emotion attached to it. It may have some, but it's not nearly as frightening. But now as an adult, we can talk about it using our rational mind, and it just becomes not so scary. So I'll give you an example. After Tuesday's show, and we talked about feelings,
mm-hmm.
I got to have life experience of that which we spoke.
Law of attraction.
Now, it wasn't like, in this horrible way, because I look at everything in my life as I'm in an experimental lab. So nothing is bad. Nothing is inherently good. It just is. And I just pay attention to it. And I see what my inner being is trying to help me have awareness of, or et cetera. So I was kind of winding down for the night, and I recognized the desire to graze on food. Not to the point that I overate and got sick to my stomach. I just kept grazing.
Mm.
And I did it for a couple of hours, and I finally just said, stop. Let's feel into this. What the heck is going on? Because if I wasn't hungry, then why was I grazing? What am I trying to avoid, et cetera?
Mm-hmm.
And it was so fascinating because I got still. I took three deep breaths, focusing on relaxation. And then I asked the question, what's happening here? What am I feeling? And my response, I burst into tears.
Wow.
And when I stopped crying, I went, I literally said out loud, well, that was unexpected.
Yeah, right.
And I went, huh. I asked myself, so what were those tears about? And I did exactly, because didn't I use the phrase, for what purpose, didn't I present that exercise?
Right.
So, let's just use that, because I just talked about it today. It's fresh in my mind. And I said, so for what purpose are these tears? And I went, because I don't know what to do about all this. And I said, for what purpose do you not know what to do about this? Well, what if I can never resolve this food issue? I said, well, that's kind of interesting. So for what purpose would you come to the conclusion that this issue cannot be resolved? And I said, well, because it's been going on for decades. And even though I know I'm making progress, I feel like it's taking too long. I said, okay, so for what purpose have you put a timeline on this? And now I was a little bit like, oh, shut up, Wendy. Quit asking questions.
Right. I know the feeling because I've been on the other side of it. I was like, oh, God, do I have to answer this one too?
But, I went, I'm just going to stick with it because I think I was at about the fifth time I asked it. And I remember telling you, it's usually once you get past five, when you get to like asking it the sixth or the seventh or the eighth time, you start to get deeper into the feelings. The rest of it is kind of just the logical mind just going, I'll just give you the answer because you're asking for it.
Yeah, it's the preliminaries, really.
Yeah, and so eventually when I kept asking, I found a really, all I can express is, articulate it as, is there was a really tender, soft place inside of me that felt really vulnerable. Not scary, raw, bad vulnerable, but sweet, tender, almost untouched. Vulnerable.
Hmm.
And so I just kind of asked, what's that about? And it's like, that's the real me, like the human real me, that there's like an embryo, a seed of me wanting to be birthed. But I have so many autopilot programs that have been running. I'm afraid I'll never be able to stop all the autopilot to let this part of me really germinate.
Well, I felt that one. I felt that one on numerous occasions, and it can feel overwhelming.
And so I just breathed, and I acknowledged that part of me. And I kind of, with just my emotions, I loved that part of me. And I said, okay, so now we know something we didn't know before. There's a sweet, tender germination going on of becoming who you really want to be.
Hmm.
And I went, yeah. And I went, well, that feels better. And I said, all right, so what do you feel now? And I went, well, I feel a little encouraged, a little bit inspired, like maybe somehow, some way I can move in a direction that will be better for me. And I said, okay, what else are you feeling? And I said, oh, that this autopilot stuff feels kind of overwhelming. And I said, okay, keep going. I just asked myself, keep talking. And then And what I know, and this is an interesting perspective I want to add here, is the more I'm talking about this, the more the law of attraction begins to help me by literally giving me new thoughts and ideas.
Right. Based on what Abraham talks about. Abraham talks about the 17-second rule. After 17 seconds of focusing on a thought, you get another thought coming to you.
And so then I felt like, because I felt like the next thought came from law of attraction, came from a universal source and not just from me, which is, look how many changes you've already made and look how quickly they have been showing up evidentially in your life. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah. And then I kind of said, tell me more. And I said, it just seems like it just keeps going. And then my internal response was, but look how far you've come. Look how many feelings you've been willing to explore, and look at the positive stuff you've gotten from it. And then the next thought was, do you really think your inner being, the universe, is going to leave you high and dry without taking you through to the end? And I went, no, not really. I'm like, of course you're going to go to the end, because all of the universe literally has your back. They're all cheerleading you. They're rooting you on. They want you to succeed because they already see you as successful. They already see it as done. You're the only one who's been left out of this picture. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I want to get on board. Mm-hmm. I want to get on board with, I want to believe it. And so that caused me to feel really good, but it started with a really, grazing behavior. I asked myself what I was feeling. I'm just summarizing here. I burst out in tears, and then I started asking, what's that about? And I just kept going and going and going until I found the better feeling thought, mm-hmm. until I found something that felt tender and sweet and doable.
Which is great.
And so that was Tuesday night.
Well, before you go any further, there's also something else I want to emphasize.
Yeah.
You kind of skipped past it quickly, but it's really important. And that is, you just taught this to us very recently, but for listeners who may not have heard, the three breaths, how you got yourself into the position to get all that guidance. Three mm-hmm. deep breaths with a deliberate intent to have each breath be a relaxing breath. That to me is a fabulous insight. When you gave that to me, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, whatever it was, I've been using it ever since then, and it really is helpful. I mean, no matter what it is I'm dealing with, whether it's going inside or just relaxing or just trying to get past an outside circumstance that I know really doesn't affect me, but I just need to take a breath. Well, I take a breath. I take three of them, and I do them all with that relaxation intention, and it really works. I can feel it. I can actually feel the stress, just kind of flow away when I do that. So thank you, first of all, for sharing that, and I want to make sure everybody else knew about that one.
And you reshared that or handed it back to me on one of the shows recently. And I went, oh, yeah, that's really good. I did say that once. I need to start using it more myself.
Yeah, right.
And so I have been incorporating it more. And so, okay, Wednesday, which was yesterday, I was really excited because I had no scheduled activities. And I was like, the whole day is mine to do with it whatever I want. I could sleep. I could go to the grocery store. I could work on my business. I could create a podcast. I could do anything I want. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to let the day unfold as it chooses to. And so I woke up yesterday morning kind of with some ideas about the direction I was going to take my day. And then once I got into my day, of course, it started to turn into something different. I got some work productivity done. I got some personal stuff done. But then I noticed, and I was noticing while it was happening, but I'll talk about it from the end of the day. I noticed that during the day, and Project Body is really where the universe has me right now. I am making progress in the area of my body.
Great.
And I wasn't planning for it. I made the commitment to it a while ago, but it's kind of unfolding on its own, which I'm really thinking is cool. So at the end of the day, I was aware that I ate multiple times during the day. I ate food that I really enjoyed. I was present while I was eating. These are the things, I've been talking about that I've been learning to do.
And good ones.
But I recognized, or for me, there was only one negative feeling going on that was kind of an undercurrent throughout the day, which is, I feel like I'm eating too much. I don't know that I really need this food, but I didn't know how not to eat it because I was using the things that I had been, that had been coming to me as new resources, which is check in. Are you hungry? Yes. Are you hungry for food? Yes. At what level on a 0 to 10 scale are you? And what I noticed at the end of the day was where I was on the 0 to 10 scale, and I'll have to kind of tell you what the different numbers mean.
Okay.
according to the scale that I'm using, like 2 is really hungry.
Okay.
And if you're at a 1 or a 0, you're ravenous.
Ah.
And when a person has been an overeater, you, at least what I resonate to is I want to avoid hitting the ravenous point.
Mm-hmm.
Because
okay.
when the body's ravenous, it tends to overeat.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's best if I can catch it at 2 or 3 and start eating then, because then I've experienced this. It's much easier for me to breathe. It's much easier for me to be present, for me to be aware of the food I'm eating and to notice how the sensations in my body so that I can recognize when I'm full. And so 5 is neutral, where you're not really hungry, but if you ate, you could eat a little bit to get full, like to top yourself off. 7 is full. 7 is satisfied. 8 is full. 9 is overstuffed. And 10 is you're sick to your stomach. So I've kind of looked at, I want to stay between the 3 and 7, 8 range. And as I reviewed the day, I'm like, you know what? I did maintain between the 3, actually in the 7 range.
Good.
I never hit full, but I have hit satisfied many times.
Good.
And I never got ravenous. I just hit a point of a low level of hunger. And I noticed that most of the time when I started eating, I was at a 4. I was like just under neutral. And then I would eat just up to full. So I was really ranged between 4 and 7, which is, if you think about it, a really small range.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like I noticed I kept my body between a 4 and a 7 all day. And because of that, it's, if you think about it, if you're driving your car and you set the rule that every time you get below a half a tank, you have to go fill up, go to a gas station.
Right.
And you're going on a long trip. You kind of end up having to stop at the gas station a lot.
That's true.
But if you're like me and you're willing to get down to an eighth of a tank before you fill up, you don't go to the gas station there that often.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about food yesterday in that way. And I kind of had this uncomfortable feeling, like there was still not something right about that either. But I wasn't angry, kind of like, you know, with Abraham's step five in the process of creation is you don't get mad at yourself when you're back at a step one contrasting moment. You just observe it. You go, okay, I can appreciate it for what it is. And that's how yesterday went for me. I'm like, I'm just observing what I'm doing. But at the end of the day, when I was lying in bed, kind of preparing myself to go to sleep so I could prepare myself segment and 10 for the next day, I said, I do really want to understand what today was about, because I felt like I had this very aware day, and I knew it was somehow for, it has a message in it for me.
The day did.
Everything I was doing, I felt that there was a message.
Oh, okay, okay.
So like every time I had a slightly negative feeling about me eating during the day, and I was paying attention to my feelings, I would ask, what do I do with this? And I was kind of getting a sense of nothing right now, like let all these experiences get strung together, and then you'll have more data to work with. And I'm like, okay, that's an interesting message, but I'll go with it.
Well, it's a good message for you because you keep talking about how you love data. So they were feeding right into your love of data.
I do. And so this morning, as I was waking up, I kind of got the sense, lean into what yesterday was about to try to get some insight. And I'd say for about an hour and a half, I was lucid in sleep, non-sleep, sleep, non-sleep, while I was becoming aware of some new ideas. I can't even tell you how many new ideas passed through me. My inner being was throwing thoughts, memories, recollections, words, song titles, all sorts of stuff at me.
Wow.
And it's kind of like when you're in a dream and you can't remember the dream, but as you're having the dream, you're aware of the dream.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how it was in this hour and a half as I was going through my process this morning. But the one that stands out to me, which I thought was most fascinating, is that I was at the moment in this process I was doing, I was focused on body signals. And I was sensing that I was somehow still learning body signals, but something wasn't quite right yet.
Hmm.
And then all of a sudden, this flash of my mother was there when I was an infant, like new infant, like 0 to 6 months infant.
Oh.
And I was getting this understanding or this concept of, you know, mothers back in the 60s followed Dr. Spock, not Mr. Spock from, you know, Star Trek, but Dr. Spock.
Dr.
He was
Spock,
like,
yes.
The baby. He was like the baby expert.
Right.
You know, and there was a lot of emphasis on schedules, you know, how often you feed the baby, when you put them to bed, you know, how often you check for diaper issues, you know, stimuli, playtime. There were just all these rules around how to train a baby and how to set them up on a schedule. And the understanding that was coming to me was those rules didn't fit me. And I know my mom said I was a screamer, that I screamed a lot. Well, I've come to understand that when babies scream, it's because they're asking for something and they're not getting it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that really resonated with me. Like, of course I'd be screaming because, like, I know what I want and why can't somebody figure it out? And I was even getting this sense of I was being put to bed too early.
Really?
I wasn't ready to go to sleep. And I know that that has a lot to do with what's going on for me now. Like the other day, I was up until 4:30 in the morning. I was wide awake. And I knew I was reconnecting with who I really am. Yet it's like, don't put me to bed before I need to go to bed. It doesn't feel right. You know, and if I want to wake up at 4 in the morning and start my day, okay. And if I don't want to go to sleep until 4 in the morning, that's okay. And now I have the freedom to do that. But anyway, back to body signals, I just got this sense that my mother didn't know how to recognize her own body signals of being full or when she had needs or wants or whatever. And she knew she had feelings, but almost every feeling she had when she didn't know what to do with it, landed in panic, which is like an extreme kind of something. And I don't know. And I'm saying all this stuff, like these are just all the thoughts that were bouncing around in my head this morning. But one of the things that really resonated with me strongly was my mother didn't know her body signals. So in essence, she taught me how not to pay attention to my body signals. And the wisdom of the cultural age was not to pay attention to a baby's body signals, but simply to put a kid on the schedule. Like it, and literally, I remember my mother saying, well, Dr. Spock says you put the baby to bed at such and such an hour, and if they scream, you just let them cry themselves to sleep.
Sure, yeah.
And she said, and Wendy, sometimes you scream for 2 to 3 hours.
Whoa, boy.
And I'm thinking, isn't that interesting how in the cultural society that I was a baby, that the wisdom was not to notice the kid is screaming their head off.
Oh, yeah.
The kid must need something.
Yeah, and that you're right. That's exactly how it was. That's precisely how most parents were. And you also described, I think, quite accurately, the fear that your mother experienced. I think a lot of women who were moms in that period of time experienced that same fear because the society had shifted so much. I mean, it was only about a generation or two previous to that where all the generations were still living in the same home. Now, this was like the 1950s, 1960s. True. Now, all of a sudden, all of the separation of the different generations of the family had already happened, and people were living in separate homes. So the old way of doing things was now just shattered, and moms were trying to make sense out of that. How do you do that? So they listened to people like Mr. Spock, or Dr. Spock, rather. Not Mr.
Dr. Spock.
If they listened to Mr. Spock, he would have just said, you know, live long and prosper. But
right. Well, and, you know, I'm not at all making anyone wrong, not even the cultural norm, not my mother. I was just getting awareness of what I experienced.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And the overarching, like, idea that I got was, wow, I was disconnected, or the social message that was given to me was not to pay attention to how I feel. And when it came to food, somebody fed me before my hunger signal went off. Because according to Dr. Spock, it's time to feed the kid. You know, and I saw this thing. it's like in my mind's eye, I could see being put to bed with a bottle in my mouth and a soft diaper propping it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't even being fed by a human.
Right.
I was put in bed and I was now just unconsciously, if you will, sucking on a bottle.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow. And I kind of had the sense that I wasn't even hungry then. Because my mind was still so awake and stimulated by just life. I wasn't ready to be going to bed and I wasn't ready to eat. But because of the social conditioning, that's what happened. And so I was just very aware of how this had been a pattern since I was an infant. I was set up for some of these things. But in my dreamlike state that I was going through this morning, having had awareness with all this, I went, I'm ready to cut vibrational ties with this.
Mm.
Because this pattern that had been conditioned in me since I was an infant does not serve me. It didn't serve me then, but I didn't have the wherewithal at 6 months old to say, hey, stop it, people. But I do today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I'm ready to neurologically, from an autopilot program, be willing to cut ties with that. I'm done. That does not work with me. And now the next question, and even I have this, so how do I know that it worked? How do I know that my saying that will make a difference? Well, I'm going to live life and I'll see what happens.
True.
But I have every reason to believe that I was guided to that information today for the purpose of letting it go.
And you may,
if there's another something that needs to be let go, I'll find out. But I'm following my feelings all the way through this one.
And you make a strong argument just through the story that you tell for getting internal guidance, because look how extensive it was. I mean, yes, part of it is we have to express it in words, but that was a pretty extensive set of guidance you got there.
And that's the piece that is law of attraction part of everything we do? Mm, yes.
Yeah.
But I call that particular segment of what I was doing personal transformation work.
Okay.
And that's something that I have been trained in how to do. Now, have I taken my training and morphed it into a more personalized integrative process? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even tell you exactly which courses and trainings that I actually implemented, but if you put them all together, it equals what I did.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this then, because you bill yourself both as a transformation coach, but you're also a coach on quantum leaping. So let's take a moment here in the last few minutes of the show to kind
remember,
of compare and contrast those.
You coined the quantum leaping.
Oh, I thought you had. I was just mirroring what you said. Maybe I didn't.
Nope.
Maybe I came up with that.
I never used that word.
Oh, then scratch the question. Forget the question. I thought, here I am putting words in your mouth. I didn't even know it.
There's a process in NLP called change personal history.
Okay.
And that is a process that I use quite frequently. And I have shortened it. I've taken away from the clinical do this, then step two is this, and step three is this. And I, in essence, took the essence of the process. And then I use my intuitive guidance to guide me to ask the questions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And guide me into the next something. But I take the essence of that process, which the whole concept is, you take something that didn't work for you, didn't serve you as a young person, and then reframe it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in essence, that's what it is. So I'm big time into reframing. I always have been, you know, finding a positive perception where you didn't see it before and you only saw it as a negative perception. But I'm kind of coming to terms with my own coaching practice, recognizing that, yes, I'm a law of attraction coach, but I also find so much value in the personal transformation process when it's called for, and helping somebody learn how to recognize their inner guidance. To me, those are the three things that I put together, like, that's the essence of who I am as a coach. And sometimes a client only needs one of those. And sometimes they need all of them. And I love knowing that I have all of those things available to me so that if a client comes to me and only needs one, well, they get it. But if they, let's say what they really wanted was more law of attraction stuff, and they went to someone who is a law of attraction coach but doesn't have the other expertise training that I have, they're only going to go so far, or they'll only go it so fast, put it that way. Because if they really need the personal transformation that I do, it's going to take them a really long time to get there. And they may give up because their money runs out without getting it.
Makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. So. Yeah. So we started this whole conversation off with boundaries and what the relationship was between boundaries and the law of attraction. And as usual, you morphed it into some pretty cool stories followed by a Project Body report. Let's go back and see if we can tie it all together. If we look at this whole panoply of stuff that we discussed there, why are our boundaries something that we're glad that we're incorporating in our practice, and what's the next step for somebody once they incorporate, you know, good boundaries?
Well, I'm going to back this up by saying my intention, and maybe this was a disconnect between you and I before the show.
Okay.
My understanding was we were going to do a follow-up on Tuesday's show, which was talk more about
healing.
Well,
true. Yes, you're right. You're right.
And then I just said, I'd like to pick up on Joel's point about boundaries and how it connects with law of attraction, which I felt like I did that in the first 15 minutes.
Oh, okay. All right.
And so to me, that one was done. And then I was focusing on, let's go back to feelings and how valuable feelings are.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine then. So really, okay. Then the conversation was about feelings. It was the continuation of the Tuesday show. And that's good. That's good.
Yeah. Okay.
Because feelings is something. What?
There can be nothing more valuable to understand than how our feelings produce the results that we have in our life. Because every thought has a feeling quality. Every feeling has a broadcast signal, and every broadcast signal is responded to by law of attraction.
So therefore, it's well worth our while to spend the time kind of getting to know that side of us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we all have so many feelings, and I'm wanting to help be a part of individuals learning how to identify their feelings.
Which is what you do as a coach. Like, actually, this is a good time to put in a little plug for you as a coach. So, you know, somebody who wants to do some of this transformational work, tell them how to get in touch.
They can reach me by going to my website, which is my name, wendydillard.com. And my contact information is all over the place, but the easiest place to find it is in the footer, because the footer is on every page. So it gives you my phone number and it gives you my email address.
That's good. That's very good. And just kind of very briefly, the first time that they contact you, what do you do? How does that first call go? Is this like trying to find out what they're trying to resolve, or what are you doing?
Usually when they reach out to me, it's to set up a time to have our free consultation.
Oh, okay.
Which I usually say is about 15 minutes. If it needs to be longer, it is. Mm-hmm. But it's really about connecting and identifying what it is they're looking for.
Okay.
And then me kind of talking about what I think about that, just for the purpose of getting a feel for what I'm like, what they're like. I mean, I've had some clients that I knew prospects that while we were talking, I thought, oh, this is not somebody who is highly motivated to actually change. And so I was sending the intention for them to be aware that they're not looking for me.
Mm-hmm.
And those are people that ended up not hiring me. And then other ones become my client because they're like, wow, this is a great conversation. And I like what you're talking about and how you're doing it. I want you to help me through this process. And then we talk about the prices that I have available and they pick the package that best suits them.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we're actually past time, so I'll have to do a little editing. But this has been great, and I look forward to talking to you next week.
All righty.
All right. We'll see you all next time as well here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.